sodomy in the synagogue. In defiance of the Old Testament's proscription against men lying with men, Leviticus 20:13, the Talmud nullifies this Old Testament law in at least five ways, by permitting sex with boys under age 9, permitting a legal slap on the wrist for sodomy with the halachic loophole created for accidental sodomy, permitting the prideful estimation of the Jewish male as being incapable of sinning in this manner, permitting the act of fellatio on infants by the mohel, the circumciser, during a circumcision, and by cultivating a flourishing homoerotic culture in the all-male ritual bath scene. In Tractate Kiddushin, Jewish bachelors are permitted to sleep together while wrapped in a single cloak. This is permissible, the rabbis decree, because Jewish males are beyond reproach when it comes to accusations of sodomy. Quote, the rabbi said to Rabbi Yehuda, Jews are not to be suspected of intercourse with a male, close quote. But as is often the case with the Talmud, the reality is otherwise. We shall begin with allegations first published in the Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. For many years, Talmud scribe Yaakov Yitzhak Britzel sodomized ultra-Orthodox boys, and the greatest rabbis knew and did nothing. At the age of 11, Moishela, the strongest fellow in the Talmud Torah, the school for ultra-Orthodox boys, went up to Shaya Britzel and said to him, Kid, I want you to know that your father is not the holy man you think he is a homo. Britzel was a scion of the Britzel family, which founded the mysterious organization that imposes moral order on the ultra-Orthodox ghetto. Had the father, Yaakov Yitzhak Britzel, contented himself with homosexual relations with adults, it is reasonable to suppose that we would never have heard his son's story. However, in his book, The Silence of the Ultra-Orthodox, published a few weeks ago, the son claims that for decades his father sodomized yeshiva students. He committed the act in empty synagogues during the hours between prayers and in other places. The greatest of the ultra-Orthodox rabbis, like Rabbi Landau and the halakhic sage Shmuel Halevi Hausner of B'nai Brak, knew and kept silent. The father was a Hasid, heart and soul, and went to a number of Rebs, the twin brother of the Reb from Rehovot, the Reb of Kretschniff in Kiryat Gat, was happy to accept the father among his followers. Ultimately, claims Britzel, it was not easy for the Reb from Kiryat Gat to be picky when he could win such a respected adherent. The proud father, with the look of an honoured Reb who observed all the commandments from the slightest to the most important, used to pray at a certain yeshiva with the young boys. There, claims Shaya Britzel, he hunted his victims. When the head of the yeshiva discovered the true reason that the respected Torah scribe was praying fervently at his yeshiva, he did not contact the police. Before the publication of his book, Shaya Britzel met with the yeshiva head. You are right that we covered up for him, admitted the man. I and a few other rabbis. I was busy trying to calm things down and hushing up the affair so that it would not get publicized. The son published the book using real names. His entire family and almost all the rabbis appear under their own names. Only the names of some of the localities and the head of the yeshiva are disguised. To protect himself, from a legal point of view, Britzel held a series of conversations with members of his family and rabbis in which he demanded explanations of why they had covered up for his father's misbehavior. He secretly recorded all these conversations, even with his mother. If I had written without the names, it would have been fiction, and they certainly did not suit me, he explained. I wanted things to change. For ultra-Orthodox society, to know that it can attempt to hide things and to be hidden, but even if it takes 30 years, a golem will always rise up against its creator and reveal everything. In this case, I was the golem. When Rachel Britzel, the daughter of a good B'nai B'rak family, married an arranged match from the glorious Britzel family. She had no idea that she was destroying her own life. After 6 months, she caught her husband having sex with another man. In that case, at least it was with an adult. Shia Britzel relates that some of the boys with whom his father had relations sent letters of complaint to their own fathers in a discreet ultra-Orthodox society. They had no one else to whom they could complain. When she read these letters, "My mother went out of her mind," writes Britzel. "Every such letter made her want to demand a divorce. Again and again, batteries of mediators, the Britzel rabbis, would show up, whose job it was to calm her down, so that, heaven forbid, she would not destroy the good name of the Britzel family. They could live with the fact that one of their own had raped minors, but for them, divorce was an impossible situation." Twice, once during prayers in a synagogue and once during a Talmud study hour at Rabbi Eliezer's yeshiva, ultra-Orthodox men who were strangers to him touched his, Shia Britzel's, sexual organ, presumably on the assumption that he followed in his father's footsteps. The first time, he made a fuss, only to discover that the only thing that interested the people there was to hash the whole thing up. The second time, he made do with a whispered warning to the man. Shia Britzel is now 36 and the father of three. He works as an accountant. His father, 65, was forced to leave home several years ago and return to his elderly parents' apartment. Shia wrote this book after a suicide attempt in June. "For all those years, I was half dead. For the past 5 years, I've been getting psychological treatment. During my talks with the psychologist, I decided that I was going to spew out all this ugliness in the form of a book." He took into account that there would be violent reactions to the book, which only came out a few weeks ago. Britzel suffers from a serious heart defect which could cause his death. As a way of protecting himself, he has deposited a letter with three lawyers that contains serious allegations about the Ida Haredit, and he has informed the relevant people. Recently, he has moved to a new apartment, and he lives in the national religious sector of a mixed community of national religious and ultra-Orthodox families. Naturally, he started praying at the only Hasidic synagogue in the settlement. After the book came out, associates of the local rabbi informed him that he was persona non grata. Ironically, this same rabbi had come to the area after being compelled to leave several other communities on suspicion of having sodomized his pupils. In ultra-Orthodox society, revealing that acts of sodomy have been committed is a far graver offence than actually committing them. On the day the book was published, Britzel met with the head of the Hasheme Lublin Yeshiva, Rabbi Avraham Vasner. "He told me that publishing the book was a million times worse than what my father had done." Haaretz has been unable to obtain a response from Rabbi Yaakov Yitzhak Britzel. At his parents' home, a woman replied, "We don't care. Shia is a liar, and there is nothing more to be said." Haaretz also requested the Britzel's response through the Ida Haredit activist Yehuda Meshai Zahav. By the time the article went to press, there was no response through this channel either. Several weeks ago, the father responded to the women's magazine, Laisha, saying that he would sue the publishers, which has not yet happened. It is unlikely that it will happen. Shia Britzel was ready to put off publication of the book on condition that the family sue him in a rabbinical court in which the affair would be aired. He has said that no one in the family was prepared to take up the challenge. In the conversation with Laisha, the father said that he was indeed a homosexual. "But I have had treatment, and today I am no longer like that. All this is behind me," he said. In reply to a question as to whether he had had sexual relations with minors, he replied, "Perhaps I will talk about that some other time." He accused his son Shia of being the only one who is after me. "He has destroyed my life. He wrote this only for the money. He wanted money from me. Because of him, I separated from my wife." Shia's sister, Rivka Hubert, spoke with great anger to the Laisha reporter about the fact that a brother had revealed the names of the persons involved and declared, "We deny everything it says in the book." End of quote from Haaretz. The legal loophole the rabbi lawyers have created for homosexuality is found in BT Sanhedrin 54b. Quote, the Gemara draws certain conclusions from what was stated above. If someone unwittingly perpetrated sodomy upon a man, and also allowed himself to be sodomized by a man, Rabbi Abuhu said that the law is as follows. According to Rabbi Yishmael, the offender is liable for two sin offerings. One sin offering for violating the prohibition of you shall not lie with a man in the manner of a woman, and a second sin offering for violating the prohibition of nor shall there be a male prostitute of the sons of Israel. These are two separate prohibitions, derived from two different verses, and so a person who violated the two prohibitions is liable for two sin offerings. According to Rabbi Akiva, the offender is only liable for one sin offering. You shall not lie with a man in the manner of a woman, and you shall not allow sodomy with a man in the manner of a woman, are two different readings of one and the same verse, and therefore a single prohibition obligating a single sin offering. And I'll just point out that the verse in the Old Testament prescribes the death penalty for a man sleeping with another man, not a sin offering, the death penalty. Back to Michael Hoffman. Here we encounter a Talmudic alibi created for a Jewish male found to have sodomized another male. The loophole is devised through the legal fiction of accidental sodomy. If someone unwittingly perpetrated sodomy upon a man. On this basis, 100 different transparently self-serving excuses are permissible grounds for self-defense, such as, I was drunk, I was out of my mind, I didn't intend it, it just happened without me realizing it. It may seem extraordinary that religionists, prone to riot when gay rights parades are convened by secularists in Jerusalem, and who publicly preach family values with a ferocity equivalent to the most vociferous Southern Baptist, would have created a loophole for dealing with homosexual acts with a liberal permissive leniency that amounts to tacit permission. But hypocrisy and double standards are Judaism's stock in trade. However shocking the realization of this fact may be to tender minds, relentlessly conditioned by neocon American talk radio and other media, to believe that Orthodox Judaism is a rigorously scrupulous, ultra-conservative Old Testament religion, they mistake the elaborate outer show of piety that historically is the hallmark of the Pharisaic mentality for genuine biblical sanctity. And what, pray tell, is accidental or unwitting sodomy? Since anal intercourse is a difficult and unnatural procedure that the human body by its very anatomy resists, it is not readily accomplished without some considerable preparation, effort, and forethought. The whole concept of it being unwitting is beneath contempt. Occasionally, the situation ethics of Judaism's counterfeit Torah are brought to light, and the anti-biblical consequences of making the Holy Scriptures subsidiary to rabbinic enactments are made manifest. Quote, in Jewish Week, December 1st, 2006, page 21, Professor Judith Hauptman, the Ebeli Ivory Professor of Talmud and Rabbinic Culture at the Jewish Theological Seminary of New York, endorsed the acceptance of homosexuality as normative, normal, and acceptable behavior according to her version of Jewish law. Professor Hauptman is an accomplished Talmudist in scope and in methodology. She is a serious scholar whose academic writing is solid. Her scholarship is balanced, reasoned, and convincing, and she may not be dismissed as a dilettante. She argues that the rabbis, on occasion, uprooted rules in the Torah, and she appeals to Hillel's uprooting the sabbatical year requirements because of the needs of the hour. Maimonides rules in Mamrin 2:4 that any court may suspend a Torah law to bring Jews back to religious law. Hillel's change was ratified by the Sanhedrin. For Professor Hauptman, the real commander is not the giver of the Torah, but the spinner of texts, with an eye towards a legitimating community. Midrash Halakha requires the acceptance of the Sanhedrin to avoid anarchy in interpretation. Close quote.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
The traditional Orthodox Judaic bris, or circumcision, encompasses a homosexual act regarded as essential to the circumcision ritual by Talmudists. We regret having to relate to the listener the ugly and frankly nauseating details of this rite, that the Mohel actually performs fellatio on the baby boy by placing the infant's penis in his mouth and sucking the blood from the wounded penis with his lips. This is not an isolated case by a crazed rabbi. This is the religious norm in circumstances performed by Orthodox rabbis in a ceremony that would be at home in the pages of Richard von Krafft-Ebing's Psychopathia Sexualis. The bris consists of three stages. Excision of the outer part of the prepuce, milah. Cutting of the inner lining of the foreskin to uncover the glands, pariah. And the sucking of the blood from the circumcised penis using the mouth and lips of the mohel, metzibah peh. The rabbinic circumcision rite, or bris, is authorized by a combination of Talmud-derived halakha and custom, minhag. There is no support for this form of circumcision in God's law in the Old Testament, but rabbinic tradition offers ample warrant. Mishnah Shabbat 19:2, quote, they may perform on the Sabbath all things that are needful for circumcision, excision, tearing, sucking, and putting thereon a bandage and cumin. If this had not been pounded up on the eve of the Sabbath, a man may chew it with his teeth and then apply it, close quote. B.T. Shabbat 133b, quote, A. Suck out the wound. B. Said our papa, a surgeon who didn't suck out the wound. That is a source of danger, and we throw him out. C. So what else is new? Obviously, since we are prepared to desecrate the Sabbath on that account, it is certainly dangerous not to do it. D. What might you have supposed? That this blood is stored up, so we are informed that it is the result of the wound, and in the status of a bandage and cumin. Just as when one doesn't put on a bandage and come in, there is danger, so here too, if one doesn't do it, there is danger. Close quote. The method to be adopted is laid down thus. One excises the foreskin, that is, the entire skin covering the glands, so that the corona is laid bare. Afterwards, one tears with the fingernail the soft membrane underneath the skin, turning it to the sides until the flesh of the glands appears. Thereafter, one sucks the membrane until the blood is extracted from the more remote places, so that no danger to the infant may ensue. And any circumciser who does not carry out the sucking procedure is to be removed from his office. And what of the practice of sucking the bleeding penis? While condemning the procedure, some physicians contend that it was used to stop bleeding. Not only is there little evidence for this theory, but it was also a largely ineffective method. Furthermore, even in antiquity, surgeons had better methods to stop bleeding, such as pressure, instruments, and medication. According to D.H. Speert, 1953, Maimonides staunchly supported this procedure, the sucking of the penis. Close quote. Just another reminder that none of that is listed in the Old Testament. The whole idea of this ritual that they do with the sucking of the penis is totally invented by the Jews themselves, and it comes purely from the Talmud, nowhere else. After centuries, a reform of the rite involving the application of the lips of the mohel to a glass straw, rather than directly to the penis, was first advised in the Haskalah era, the late 18th and early 19th centuries, by Moses Scriber, but it was implemented only by a segment of the modern Orthodox movement. Many Judaic authorities, both medical and rabbinic, continue to uphold the traditional practice of performing fellatio on the infant male. Quote, the traditional practice of mitzvah peh, which has its roots in the earliest history of the Jewish people and has survived unchanged to the present time, should be viewed with great respect. It is spoken of very positively in the Jewish literature on circumcision, both as an essential part of the ritual and as a health measure which prevents infection and promotes healing. Close quote. That's from Henry C. Romberg, MD, a doctor, his book called Bris Milah. Officials at Agadath Israel, which is headed by a council of Hasidic and non-Hasidic ultra-Orthodox rabbis, have defended direct oral suction. Dozens of ultra-Orthodox rabbis signed a full-page Hebrew advertisement that ran in the February 25, 2005 issue of Yated Naaman, defending the practice. Rabbi Gerald Chanonas from Boomtown, New Jersey, a prominent mohel in the greater New York region, said the practice of orally suctioning blood was the norm for centuries. Rabbi Avi Shafran, director of public affairs for Agadath Israel, said that it is a religious tradition of many generations. Another rabbinic organization, the Central Rabbinical Council, and at least two Orthodox newspapers, Yated Naaman, in a statement issued by Rabbi Pinchos Lipschutz in the February 18, 2005 edition, and Der Yid, also defend mitzvah peh. Critics will claim we are selectively reporting the controversy, since some rabbinic groups have lately come out against the practice. Such claims, beginning from a dishonest premise, barely merit a response. Much of the opposition is from Reform Jews, not the rabbis of Orthodox Judaism. Even when some Orthodox rabbis reluctantly seek to modify mitzvah peh, they do so for purposes of public relations, due to knowledge about this filthy insanity being leaked to the public, thereby threatening to seriously undermine Judaism's pose as a biblical religion and harm its prestige among the Gentiles. There has been some Jewish opposition, based on the act being insanitary and a means for the transmission of oral herpes, but we have seen absolutely no principled Orthodox rabbinic opposition to the rite, due to the fact that it constitutes homosexual molestation of the helpless infant. Quote, in a day when there is great concern about sexual molestation of children, many may wonder how an adult can legally put his mouth on a child's genitals. Vincent Bonventer, a law professor at Albany Law School, said that courts often allow exemptions to general laws for religious practices. Cases are more difficult when there is a direct conflict between law and religion, like when a religion requires an act that is forbidden by law, Bonventura said. When the government's interest is not paramount, the courts generally hold that you cannot require an individual to violate their religion. Close quote. All of the risks common to homosexual sex are present in the Orthodox Jewish bris. Quote, ritual Jewish circumcision, and that includes mitzvah, with direct oral genital contact, carries a serious risk for transmission of HSV from mohels to neonates, which can be complicated by protracted or severe infection. Jewish circumcision with oral metzitza may cause oral genital transmission of HSV infection, resulting in clinical disease, including involvement of the skin, mucous membranes, and HSV encephalitis. Furthermore, oral suction may not only endanger the child, but also may expose the mohel to human immunodeficiency virus, or hepatitis B, from infected infants. Monse Rabbi David Eidensohn said the spreading of disease is rare through the oral suction method. He said his five sons and numerous grandsons, as well as hundreds of thousands of newborn boys, had undergone the procedure. Orthodox rabbis who support the procedure say 2,000 to 4,000 such circumcisions are still performed each year in the city of New York alone. They insist the procedure is safe and does not transmit herpes, which can be contracted by infants from their mothers during childbirth. For some Jews, the procedure is crucial to raising boys in a Jewish tradition. One of the most revered Orthodox rabbis, Rabbi David Neiderman, said, We chose America because of religious freedom. That's why we are here. There is no compromise on this issue, because we know that it is safe. Close quote. In 2005, after a Mohel transmitted herpes to a New York infant during Mezzabah Pair, the practice was legally challenged. In a political deal struck during his 2005 election campaign, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg promised to keep the Mezzabah Pair homosexual predation legal. As a result, Orthodox Jews supported him in a blog. With 3 days to go before Election Day, ultra-Orthodox Jewish leaders in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, held what was by far the largest rally of Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg's campaign, with searchlights bouncing across the Brooklyn sky and klezmer music blaring from speakers hoisted on cranes. Thousands of Hasidic Jews in black hats or headscarves cheered the beaming mayor from rooftops and blocks upon blocks of bleachers. When Rabbi David Neiderman addressed the throngs, he praised the mayor for his support for the constitutional separation of church and state. For many in the crowd, the last reference was code for the administration's decision to hold off from taking action against an ancient form of ritualistic circumcision. Close quote. Mayor Bloomberg was as good as his word. By June of 2006, an agreement between the New York State Department of Health and the rabbis, renewing permission for fellatio on infant boys as part of the bris, was granted. It was one of the more unusual public policy negotiations. Yiddish-speaking rabbis venturing to Albany for months on Sunday nights to talk with the state's Catholic Health Commissioner about a controversial circumcision ritual. They brushed up on science journals. She read the Talmud. In the end, Commissioner Antonia Novello, in pink suit and gold jewellery, and a sea of men with long beards, black suits and hats, signed a new protocol Monday, June the 12th. The new state guidelines require Mohels, or anyone performing Mezzabah Pair, to sanitize their hands like a surgeon. The person performing Mezzabah Pair must also clean his mouth with a sterile alcohol wipe, and no more than 5 minutes before it, rinse for at least 30 seconds with a mouthwash that contains 25% alcohol. Novello said she read the Talmud and the writings of the rabbi and philosopher Maimonides. The Jewish leaders said they read more scientific journals than they could count. Novello said she treated the rabbis with the same respect that she would treat Catholic cardinals. The rabbis, in turn, seemed charmed and entertained by the woman who called them my rabbis and greeted them with a hearty Hebrew shalom. Rabbi David Neiderman, the executive director of the United Jewish Organizations of Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and a member of the Central Rabbinical Congress of the USA and Canada, said the issue was not about a lack of understanding, but about not appreciating. People, even those who are not Jewish, should appreciate the fact that this is a religion that's been around for thousands of years. Close quote. That last bit was from the Albany Times. There are many aspects of Orthodox Judaism that have homosexual features, including male-only nude ritual baths and episodic segregation from women. Since generations of adult Jewish males were molested as infants by the Mohel, they are marked for darkness through this heinous act, just as surely as the Christian is marked for light by baptism. Prior to the modern era, every Orthodox Jewish male was molested as an infant, and then as a child growing up and as an adult, he witnessed a series of ritual molestations at subsequent circumcisions. Quite naturally, the sight of repeated acts of fellatio perpetrated by adult males on baby boys leads to the creation of a subtle homosexual culture that permeates the whole of Orthodox Jewry.
You're tuned in to